What's the source of receiverships? Well, they're available at common law and equity. They're available pursuant to statutory authority. The ones that are most common for creditors, real estate secured loans, the statutory schemes are found in Texas Civil Practice Remedies Code, Chapter 64, and then in the Texas Business Organizations Code, Chapter 11, which governs the appointment of receivers for domestic assets or more commonly for the assets, I'm sorry, for domestic entities or more commonly for the assets of domestic entities. There are additional procedural requirements with regard to the appointment receiver that are found in Rule 695 and Rule 695A of the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure. The grounds for a receiver are really the most common in a creditor situation are very similar in Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code Section 6401 and Texas Business Organizations Code Section 11403. And the two that are most appropriate for creditors are an action by a creditor to subject property or fund to the creditor's claim, or an action by a mortgagee for the foreclosure of the mortgage and the sale of the mortgage property. The receiver's sought to subject any property or fund the creditor's claim, under both statutory schemes, the creditor must have a probable right or probable interest in the property or fund. So a lien interest or a security interest, something of that nature. The property or fund to be placed to the receiver must be in present danger of being wasted, lost, removed, or materially injured. There has to be some risk to the property that in the absence of the receiver will occur. If the receiver is being sought by a creditor under the Texas Business Organizations Code, there's some additional requirements that have to be satisfied. The party seeking the receiver must also establish that the circumstances exist that are considered by the court to necessitate the appointment of the receiver to conserve the property or fund, that all requirements of law have been complied with. And then the one that is probably the most difficult is that all other available legal and equitable remedies are inadequate. And again, that's only under the Business Organizations Code. That's not a requirement under the Civil Practice and Remedies Code. If the receiver is sought by a mortgagee in an action for foreclosure of the mortgage and sale of the mortgage property, there are two circumstances. One, kind of like with the property or fund, if there's a risk that the property is being in danger of being lost, removed, or materially injured. But more commonly, the alternative is if the mortgage is in default and the mortgage property is probably insufficient to discharge the debt, the property is underwater. Lenders typically get receivers when the lender is not anxious to foreclose, or there's some reason why the lender does not want to foreclose, something at the property level. And it's a way to get a third party to take possession and control the property without the lender taking title. Receiverships are actually pretty difficult to get when they're opposed. It's not perfunctory at all. These are some quotes from cases in Texas dealing with receiverships. Receivership is an extraordinary harsh remedy and one that courts are particularly loath to utilize. Receivership deprives an owner of the use of the owner's property, and therefore receivership is one of the harshest remedies known to law. An ex parte receivership should be exercised with extreme caution and only where great emergency or imperative necessity requires it. You know, back in the last downturn, receiverships were very common, and I think a lot of clients really thought they were automatic. A good many of those receiverships were agreed or unopposed, and the reason why many of those were agreed or unopposed is because of springing provisions in loan documents, in particular guarantees. So there was an incentive for the principals of the borrower, the guarantors, to concede and allow receivership as opposed to risking losing the non-recourse nature of the indebtedness and their personal guarantees. Rule 695, the tax rule of procedure, provides that except where otherwise provided by statute, a receiver appointed for fixed and immovable property, real estate, requires a hearing. It just cannot be done ex parte. There are some exceptions to that, more practical than legal exceptions to that, where judges will permit it, notwithstanding Rule 695. But when you file an application for receiver for real property, you should anticipate having to set it for hearing on not less than 3 days' notice and having an evidentiary hearing unless parties agree to do it by affidavit or without the requirement of evidence. It's very common in loan documents, in particular deeds of trust, to see contractual provisions for receiverships. The grantor or borrower consents to the appointment of a receiver. There's often provisions that talk about a waiver of a bond or the waiver of establishing the lack of an adequate remedy at law. Those provisions are helpful. Judges look at them. They are factors to be considered by the court, in particular factors to be considered by the court in balancing the equities, but they're not binding on the court. The court still has the discretion to deny the receivership notwithstanding provision. The court's not required to appoint a receiver on the basis of a contractual provision. Provision is entitled to some evidentiary weight, but it's not the end all be all.